Well, so far so good today, right? I was supposed to say, welcome. We're so glad you're here. Welcome. But what I wanted to say was welcome back. You know, because I think that's funny. Welcome back. Haven't seen you since Christmas, right? Yeah. Okay, don't encourage me. Yeah, don't encourage me. The truth is, Easter is a great day to come back. It's a great day for a comeback. Because that's what Easter is all about, coming back. And today, I would like you to think about making a comeback to God, to faith, to life. And the invitation to make a comeback is rooted in that part of the Easter story that we saw portrayed in that video. And this morning I want us to step into that story and see it through the eyes of three women who were there. And their story is found in the Gospel of Mark, chapter 16. We're going to start by reading verse 1, which says this: when the Sabbath was over, Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James, and Salome brought spices so that they might go to anoint Jesus' body. So that's where it all begins. Three women, two named Mary, one named Salome, and they're on their way with a collection of spices to anoint Jesus' body. In their culture, that's the way you treated the body of someone who had died. You perfume that body. You anoint it with spices. And for these three women, this is their response to what they have seen. They knew that Jesus' body was in need of this kind of anointing because they had seen him die, watched him die. Jesus had been arrested on that Thursday night, taken to the high priest, put on trial, and finally, in the early morning hours of Friday, he'd been condemned to death. And later that day, he did die by crucifixion, hanging on a cross until he was dead. And so finally, at the end of a brutal, painful sequence, Mark records the end. With a loud cry, he records, Jesus breathed his last. And these women saw it. Some women, it says, were watching from a distance. Among them were Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James the younger and of Joseph, and Salome. There's our three women. They were there. They saw him die. They heard him breathe his last. And now they've come to anoint the body. Now they've been delayed because Jesus died on Friday. And the Sabbath begins at sundown on Friday, and no work, nothing could be done until the Sabbath was over on Sunday. And so this is them coming as early as they possibly can to the tomb. Very early, it says, on the first day of the week, just after sunrise, they're on their way to the tomb. They're on their way to the tomb. And as they come to the tomb, there's a question that's on their lips. And the question is this: who will roll the stone away from the entrance to the tomb? Who will roll the stone away? That's their question. And again, this is their response to what they had seen. They knew this because of what they had seen. When Jesus was dead, a man named Joseph bought some linen cloth, took down the body, wrapped it in the linen, and placed it in a tomb cut out of the rock. And then he rolled a stone against the entrance of the tomb. It was sealed, as would be their custom, by a giant stone, rolled into a grooved track so that it was easy to get it in, but impossible to get it out. And these women were there. They had seen it all. Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of Joseph, they saw where he was laid. And so as they come to the tomb that early morning, the question on their lips is, who will roll the stone away? That was their obstacle. But the question in their hearts was probably more like, what do we do now? What do we do now? Because the person that they loved, that they were devoted to, that they were following with their lives, the person who for each of them had brought forgiveness or deliverance or healing or community, that person suddenly, quickly, too soon, was gone, dead. And so what do they do now? You ever felt that way? What do I do now? Maybe like them, it was after the death of someone you loved, someone you relied on, someone you depended on, someone you never imagined living without, and now you're in that place where you say, what do I do now? Maybe it wasn't a person. Maybe it was a future, a job or a career path, something you had planned out and expected and hoped for that's been taken from you. And you're left with that question, what do I do now? Could be your health. Your health has suffered and been taken from you, and you wonder, what do I do now? Maybe it's God. Maybe God didn't turn out the way you'd hoped. Maybe Jesus didn't answer your prayers the way you wanted. Maybe your life didn't get better in the ways that you thought it might with him a part of it. And so you're disillusioned and you're left with that question, what do I do now? What do I do now? I think that's the question that was on their hearts as well. And for these three women, the answer is going to come in what they see next. Chapter 16, verse 4 says, when they looked up as they arrived at the tomb, when they looked up, they saw that the stone, which was very large, had been rolled away. So they had seen Jesus die, and they had seen him put into the tomb. They had seen the tomb sealed, but now they see something different, which is this stone, which Mark helpfully tells us was very large, has been rolled away. Mark's our most succinct gospel writer. He doesn't like to waste words. And so the other gospel writers say things like, there was an earthquake, you know. But not Mark, just the stone was gone. It was large. And this is the beginning of a sequence of events for these women where what they would see would run in contrast to what they had seen. And their minds are going to have difficulty comprehending it. Their brains are going to have a hard time getting around it because this is the signal that something unusual, something unexpected has occurred. And it's the beginning of the answer to their question, what will we do now? So they dare to enter into this tomb, seeing that the stone is rolled away, and they see something else. As they entered the tomb, they saw a young man dressed in a white robe sitting on the right side, and they were alarmed, as you would be. There's somebody in the tomb. And when Mark signals to us that it was a young man dressed in a white robe, he's telling us something unusual. When Mark uses language about people in white robes, he means angels. They're not just wearing white t-shirts, they're dazzling white in their appearance. And so this is the second unusual thing that these women see. First is the stone being rolled away. Second is an angel in the tomb, a messenger from God, with a message from God. And then they hear the message. Don't be alarmed, he said. You are looking for Jesus the Nazarene, who was crucified. He has risen. He is not here. See the place where they have laid him. So their minds now are having trouble comprehending what they've seen. A stone rolled away, an angel inside the tomb, and the only way they can interpret and understand what is happening is to hear the words of an angel. It takes a divine messenger to make it clear. He's risen. He's not here. He's gone. And then the angel says, see for yourself. See the place where he was laid. And that's the third thing that they see that is unusual. The stone, the angel, and now they see the empty tomb. Where they knew Jesus was, but he isn't any longer. and they hear this message that he has risen. See for yourself. And this is the heart of the message of Easter, that Jesus Christ, who was dead and was buried, has come back from death. He has come back from the dead. He is risen. And it is the greatest reversal of all time. It is the greatest reversal of history. It's the biggest comeback ever, because it flies in the face of everything that you and I know, everything that we see, everything that our minds are able to comprehend. There's no categories to understand the message that he is risen, right? There's nothing rational to explain it to us. Only the angel, only the divine message can make it clear to us and provide the interpretation. He has risen. He's not here. See it for yourself. That's the message. And that's about comeback. So the best news, though, is still to come. As amazing and incredible as it is that the angel has just announced that Jesus is not dead, he has risen, what he says next to these people is even more remarkable. And that's verse 7. But go, the angel says, tell his disciples and Peter. He is going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him just as he told you. Go tell his disciples and Peter. He has risen from the dead. He's going to meet you in Galilee. You are going to see them there as well. And so the women have to go tell the disciples, precisely because the disciples were not there. They were nowhere to be found. The disciples are the 12 closest followers of Jesus. Well, 11 now. Judas, one of them, has betrayed Jesus, gotten him arrested, and in remorse he has killed himself. These 11 who walked with Jesus, lived with Jesus, gave their lives to Jesus, they began to believe and recognize that Jesus was the Messiah. They were closest to Jesus, but now they are farthest from him, because they have all turned their backs. They've all fled. When Jesus was arrested, they scattered, afraid. And so now the angel has to tell the women, go tell them. Jesus is going to meet them. And the thing I want you to notice is this emphasis on Peter. It says, but go tell his disciples and Peter. Peter gets singled out. And the question is, why? Why single out Peter? I mean, Peter was one of the disciples. It would totally suffice to just say, go tell the disciples, because Jesus was one of them. Or, I mean, Peter was one of them. But they make a point to say, go tell the disciples and Peter. Even Peter. Especially Peter. And the reason is because this is a message of welcome. He has risen. He is going to Galilee. He wants to meet you there. You are welcome. Even though you have turned your back, even though you lost your nerve, even though you left, you can come back. You're welcome back. Even Peter. Especially Peter. Because if there was anybody who needed a comeback, it was Peter. Peter, who had walked away from Jesus in an amazing public fashion. 3 times on the night of his arrest, Peter would publicly deny that he even knows Jesus. Mark 14 tells us the story. Jesus, having been arrested, he was taken into the house of the high priest, and out in his courtyard, a crowd had gathered. People who wanted news or to see what was happening or were interested to hear. Peter has slipped into this crowd for his own reasons, listening, wondering. And a servant girl, though, who works for the high priest, sees him in the crowd and points him out and says, you also were with that Nazarene, Jesus. But he denied it. I don't know or understand what you're talking about, he said. And he went out into the entryway. He left. He went to find another place in the crowd where he could blend in and not be noticed. But it doesn't work. She's circulating through the crowd, and she sees him again, and she points her finger at him and says, this fellow is one of them. And again, he denied it. After a little while, those standing near said to Peter, surely you are one of them, for you're a Galilean, for crying out loud. We can tell. And he began to call down curses, and he swore to them, I don't know this man that you're talking about. Cursing and swearing, Peter denies that he even knows who Jesus is. And then the most remarkable thing happens. Immediately the rooster crowed the second time, and then Peter remembered the word that Jesus had spoken to him. Peter, before the rooster crows twice, you will disown me three times. And remembering this, Peter breaks down and weeps. It had been a moment of boasting, a moment of camaraderie and bravado the night before when Peter had said, Jesus, if I have to die with you, I will. If they kill you, they'll have to kill me too. And Jesus looked at him and said, Peter, you won't even last the night. By the time the rooster crows, you'll have denied me three times. And when it turns out exactly the way Jesus said, the rooster crowing jogs his memory and he breaks down and he weeps bitterly, for he's turned his back on Jesus in the most public, profound way possible. When the pressure was on, Peter gave in. Maybe he was afraid. Maybe he's afraid he'd get arrested. Maybe he was afraid he'd end up on trial. Maybe he was afraid he would end up crucified like Jesus. Maybe he was just looking out for his family, right? Maybe he was disillusioned. Maybe everything he thought Jesus was going to do and be, he thought he would be king. He thought he would right the world. He thought he would be the victor. All that was gone now, and everything he'd hoped and believed in was gone. And what does he do now? And so he didn't know Jesus. Maybe he just wasn't strong enough. But in any case, when he turns his back on Jesus, Peter finds himself far away. I don't know if you can relate to that. Maybe you can. You ever walked away from God just because it's unbelievable? This story about Easter. Or maybe because Jesus didn't live up to your expectations. It didn't turn out the way you wanted when you prayed. Or maybe you can relate to the denials, the standing in public and saying, I don't know him. Or maybe not even with your words, just with your actions, I don't know him. Peter, when he hears the news from these women, when they come and tell him the tomb is open and it's empty and there's been an angel who told us Jesus has risen, when Peter hears that, like we've seen in the video, he's going to run. He's going to run across town and through the countryside and up to the hill to see for himself the open tomb. And he's going to have his own experience with the resurrected Jesus, but not until after these words. And Peter, even Peter, especially Peter. Make sure Peter, of all people, knows that he is welcome to come back, because that is what resurrection means. When Jesus dies on the cross, he's not simply the victim of an empire that couldn't deal with rebellion. He goes to the cross on purpose. As part of God's plan, he wears not only a crown of thorns, but he bears the sin and the shame of the entire human race. God places on Jesus the weight, the burden, the just penalty for the sins and the shortcomings and the moral failings of the entire human race. And Jesus takes them willingly, even Peter's. He takes Peter's denials and his failures and his weaknesses, and he puts them to death and buries them. And then he comes back. And when Jesus comes back from the dead, this burden that he bears doesn't come with him. It's finished. It's gone forever. What Peter could never do for himself, what Peter could never atone for on his own, the stain he couldn't wash out of his life, Jesus does for him. Jesus takes it from him on the cross, into the grave, and buries it, defeats it. So welcome back, Peter. Go tell Peter he can come back. There's nothing left between us. There's no barrier. There's no obstacle. There's no failure. It's been dealt with by Jesus on the cross. Jesus comes back from the dead and makes it possible for Peter to make his own comeback. And come back he would. What about you? You need a comeback? Do you need to come back? Can you relate to Peter and his denials? Can you relate to Peter and his suffering or his fear or his disillusionment? You need to come back. Do you want to come back, but wonder if you would be welcome? Wonder if you could? Easter is a great day for a comeback, my friends. It's a great day to come back because the words given to Peter are given to you too. You're welcome back. Even you. Especially you. There's nothing left that can keep you away from God. Jesus has dealt with it. That means there is no place that you've been that is too far from him. There's no hole too deep that you can't climb out. Jesus wore your sin. He wore your denials on the cross. He took them into the grave and he left them there. And he has risen. He has come back from the dead. And when he comes back, he announces and declares his victory over the very thing that keeps us from God, which is our sin. And when he gives us that victory, it allows us to rise up, resurrected ourselves from the ashes of defeat in our own lives. Because the message of Easter is that Jesus came back from the dead. But the message means that you too can make a comeback. And so I told you I wanted you to think this morning about making a comeback. And I imagine you could find yourself in one of three places today. One is knowing you need to come back, wanting possibly to come back. And today, my heart would be for you to know that he wants you back, that there's no place you've been too far, no hole you've dug too deep, that he can't welcome you back, that he won't welcome you back. Or you might be a person today that this is the very first time you've heard this message. And so maybe today isn't coming back, it's coming for the very first time to Jesus, to the cross, to the resurrection, and believing that what you couldn't do for yourself, remove the burden of sin and shame, he's done for you. Maybe you're here today and you're celebrating. You're not far. You don't feel like you need to come back. You're simply celebrating and awaiting the hope and the promise that Jesus is coming back again. Knowing that that's your life and knowing that that's your hope. And this is a day of celebration. I'm going to pray for us in a moment. And I want you to think about your need, your desire for a comeback. And I'm going to ask you not to do anything unusual or strange, but to simply utter in your heart to God your desire. And if that desire is to come back, then I want you to say it. If that desire is to come for the first time in faith to Jesus, I want you to say it in your heart to him. If today you're rejoicing and celebrating that he will come back, then I want you to say that to him today too. Join me as we pray.